Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, we're back here, and we are hosting the Implant Pathway Group for dinner here at my home, and I always take advantage of while we have the people here. I was playing virtual golf with Dr. Craig Lamborn here, and you hit the ball much harder than I do. You swing way harder than I do, but you're 10 years younger than me, so that's interesting. So, Craig, you are a 2015 graduate?
That's right.
And you're taking the Implant Pathway course with Justin Moody.
Yep.
And you're taking it all the way with the Live Patient program.
Next month, yep.
What made you do that investment in implantology? Why implants? And on top of that, you're working at a DSO practice, so why implants? I thought DSOs don't let people do that.
Well, it totally depends. With the office that I'm in, currently I just recently transferred to a different office. In Texas, and they're doing a ton of implants.
Okay.
So
you needed the skill.
I've been wanting to do implants for a long time. I had been having some resistance as far as being able to take that CE. But
the resistance from where? Yourself?
From Heartland.
Okay. Yeah. They resisted you taking it, or
just they wanted me to do some other CE before I took implants, and I was, so anyways, I've been out of school almost 3 years, and I knew that this is something that I wanted to learn more about and start doing, so I had an opportunity to transfer to this practice in Texas where they're just doing a ton of implants, and so.
Where were you before?
I was in Illinois.
Illinois, okay. Mm-hmm. So you moved down and you happened to be practicing with Dr. Bruce Baird of the Productive Dentist Academy and of Compassionate Finance.
Yeah.
What's working with Bruce like?
That's great.
How many, is he there quite often?
He works 2 days a week, usually. And it's great. I mean, they got a well-oiled machine there. I mean, it's a very highly productive practice. It's a great practice. It's been established for 30, 40 years. They have a great reputation in that area. And, you know, he does dentistry, in a style that I like.
Okay. And define that. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, he does comprehensive lifetime care.
Okay. So he does complete care.
Yeah. So,
you know, oftentimes when people say comprehensive care, they think full mouth rehabs and they think all this fancy stuff. But when I think of comprehensive and complete care, I think about a philosophy of just having your patient say yes to the best. In other words, getting your fillings updated, getting these things done and presenting those things to the patient. So I'll let you continue.
Yeah, so I think with a lot of DSOs, there is a tendency to kind of pump patients through.
Okay.
And you don't really build that relationship with the patient, and you kind of get as much done as you can for that day, and then you move on to the next day. Well,
so rinse and repeat.
Right. And in this office that I'm in now with Dr. Baird, you know, he's got patients that have been there for 30, 40 years. And he's got a relationship with them all. They've come to know and appreciate him. And so when he does, you know, dentistry for him, you know, we're seeing bridges that were done 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're seeing crowns that were done 30 years ago. He's doing a lot of implants, you know, and that's something that I hope to learn a lot more about and start doing myself.
Okay.
He's Dr. Baird recommended this implant pathway course.
Okay, so that's why you came.
Yep, that's how I got in touch here.
So you're here learning because you want to add this service to your clinical care services. The practice that you're in needs you to do these things.
Yeah.
Okay, because, and at the end of the day, if you want to earn more, you got to do more types of procedures.
Sure.
Or you got to learn to see a lot more patients.
Yeah.
And here we go there. So where was your implant education when you started? Like, in other words, what did you learn in dental school, implant-wise?
I would say it's pretty minimal. I mean,
you watched some, saw some.
I watched, I restored some in school.
Restoring is taking an impression screw
Right.
Exactly. It's not overly complicated.
Right.
Although it was complicated when I first did it, like which one fits what. It was more about understanding the pieces.
In dental school, they can make everything complicated.
Yeah, dude, it's unbelievable.
But I didn't place any during school. So, and I guess in the time that I've been out of school, I've had the opportunity to look over some shoulders and look at, when I'm watching Dr. Baird or some of the other doctors I've worked with, you know, I've been able to learn quite a bit, just kind of watching and observing. But there's something about being able to do some hands-on yourself.
Right.
That's why I felt like I needed the implant pathway program and need something to help me.
Well, you need something for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're doing the live patient program, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
So you enjoy working at the DSO. And what in our private conversation earlier, you had mentioned to me that you didn't necessarily see yourself staying or being there this long term. You went into it with a short-term mentality.
Sure.
What made you go to a DSO to begin with? Because, you know, today, roughly 60% of all graduates join a DSO.
Yeah, so, it's one of those situations where I came out of school, and to be frank with you, I was so broke, I was so poor, that, you know, maxing out credit cards and this thing from, you know, I went to school in Southern California. And
you grew up in Utah.
I grew up in Utah.
Yeah.
So I was working in California at the time.
A dentist.
Right out of school. I was working in California, and I actually had a good conversation with a doctor who's in private practice, looking for someone to bring on. And I was really excited about the practice. It was in Texas. And after I got off the phone with him, you know, basically we ended the conversation with, hey, you should fly out to Texas, come check it out, make sure you're a good fit, and we'll go from there.
Right.
I didn't have the heart to tell him.
You couldn't afford to go.
I couldn't even afford a plane ticket to get me and my wife out there to check it out. And we were just about to have our second baby. And it was just a kind of a crazy time. Well, I had a friend working for Heartland. And he said, well, hey, you ought to look at Heartland. There's a lot of opportunities. And he was in the Midwest. He's like, come out to the Midwest. Come check out some offices. So Heartland was willing to fly me, my wife, my kids, everyone out on their dime. And then they give you a little bit of a sign-on bonus. And so for me, it made sense.
In your situation.
Yep.
It's interesting.
And it's been great.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I think there's a lesson that I'm learning in this, and that is, at the end of the day, when you're in a position where you want to bring people on, sometimes because, and I'm very guilty of this, sometimes because of our success that we've experienced, we sometimes assume everybody else is in that situation,
right?
Or we don't know that, we don't take the time to learn their situation, and what happened is a dentist possibly missed a fantastic opportunity, partly your fault, okay, partly his or her fault, because they didn't ask about that and you didn't have the guts to say anything about it, okay? So we're going to give blame where blame is to a certain degree.
Sure.
So oftentimes to my private practitioners out there that say to me, well, we can't hire people because we lose them all to the DSOs, well, there's one of the reasons sometimes, because people have this choice of, hey, this company will pay for me to come see them if that's a situation. Did you have to ask for that?
Well, no, they offered.
They offered. Okay.
Yeah.
and a signing bonus, or I can take this situation. And for some people, economics may say, hey, I can take this risk and do this. And for some good people, okay, they may say, I would love to consider this, but it's not a choice for me right now.
Right. I mean, everyone's coming out of school in a different situation. Some have mom and dad helping flip the bill for, you know, student loans. You know, for me, my situation, there's no way I could afford to buy a practice.
And you had a kid, and you have another one coming.
Yeah.
Sounds like my dad in 1977.
And so, you know, I just had to get the word to start making a paycheck, and I couldn't afford to go without a paycheck.
Were you getting a guarantee with Heartland?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about this practice that you had talked about? Did you even get to that point where you're going to get a guarantee there?
Which practice?
The practice that you were considering in Texas, but you couldn't fly out there to even see the practice.
I don't remember if we had... I don't think we talked specifically on numbers.
But what if you went to a practice that you felt that you could make good money, but there was zero guarantee?
Yeah.
And you have this over here in your situation where there is a guarantee, maybe a potential on the upper end for less money, but there's a guarantee. Which one made you have chosen at the time?
At the time coming out of school, I would have wanted a guarantee.
Okay.
And I know this from talking to others that, you know, one thing about private practice is, especially if a guy's, if you're not acquiring a practice or, you know, buying a guy out, you know, there may be a tendency in that situation for you to be kind of starting from scratch, right? Because you're not taking that guy's patient load. You're not taking work from him, usually.
In my practice, you are. I brought people out to give away my patients.
Well, yeah, that would be great. But that's not always the case, right? So if I was going into a private practice, I would have said, okay, I need a guarantee. Mm-hmm. Let's hope that I can produce a lot more than that. But I think that for someone coming out of school, you almost have to, unless you're just in a situation financially where it doesn't matter to you.
Sure. But that's far and few between these days.
Right.
Yeah. This is a good conversation for me and for my colleagues that are my age group, because one of the things I'm trying to get more dentists to do is to develop group practices, not multiple locations necessarily, but to develop multiple doctor practices. And to do that, you often have to bring in associates, which is what we've done. And you have to understand the mindset of the people that you're bringing in, because if you don't, you know, you're going to be, you know, you're going to lose out on potentially good people.
Well, one thing that I would say, as a rule of thumb for me, would be I would not want to be in a situation where I was contracted for a period of time and not have a guarantee tied to that contract.
But every contract's a 30-day out.
In every state across?
I mean, almost 30, 60 days.
Because I know a lot of associates that are looking for, I know a lot of associates that will ask for like a 2-year contract or.
But it's every contract I've seen has been where it's a 30-day notice or 60-day notice. So while it could be I could give you a 20-year contract, and in there it could say that if it's not working out, I just need to give you 60 days notice.
Okay.
You know, and then what's the point of a 20-year contract at that stage?
Yeah, I guess I didn't understand it that way. I guess when a doctor says, hey, you know, I'm expecting a 2-year commitment out of you, if I agree to that 2-year commitment.
I think that's your cultural background, maybe.
Whether I can legally get out of it or not, I'd like to be able to say, okay, I'm going to give you 2 years.
But what if it's a horrible place?
Well, I agreed, which is why.
That's why everybody has to have an out.
Right.
You know, you got to plan for the divorce before you get married. Especially in dentistry, you know?
Right. Which is why, I mean, it would be horrible for you to be in a situation where you didn't feel like you could get out of and you weren't making any money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
wouldn't work.
Yeah, so to me, So, you know, ultimately, I think everything, even, I bet you if you really take a close look at your contract that you probably have, there's some 30, 60, 90-day out clause for everybody. Okay. So I'm not familiar with them, so I can't say for certain. So you had a friend with Heartland.
Yeah.
You ended up going there.
Yeah.
It was a good decision for you.
Yeah, I loved it. It's been great.
You got to do good dentistry there?
I basically got to do whatever I wanted,
Okay. Which
is what I really liked and appreciate. I was the only doctor in the office.
Okay.
If I wanted to
Did you feel overwhelmed by that?
I didn't, because I had spent a year working in California.
Okay.
And I really liked
it. What if that was your first job? What if you were right out of school? Would you have felt overwhelmed being the only doctor in the office?
I think it would have been too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 1 year in, you were comfortable being...
1 year in, there was a big difference in my confidence and my ability to do it on my own. And I loved it because I did what I wanted to do. And I just did a lot of bread and butter dentistry. I developed my skills, my speed, my confidence. And if I wasn't comfortable with something, I just referred it.
Okay.
And that wasn't a big issue.
So there weren't quotas. I'm asking questions I know the answer to, okay?
Right.
But I'm asking because what I hear from the colleagues that I talk to is that there's this stigma that goes with DSOs that they tell you what to do, they tell you what materials to use, they like hold a gun to your head and make you do things. And what I'm hearing from you that is far from the case.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that.
Okay.
So, at all. So, you know...
And they support you in education and learning.
Yes. Now, do they try to steer you towards certain courses or, you know...
But that's like parents, man.
Right.
My parents tried to steer me towards things, and at the time, I hated it. But looking back, those were great things for me, right? Like, because at the end of the day, and I don't want anybody listening or you to take it the wrong way, but 1 year out of school, you may want to do implants, but until you get a good fundamental knowledge of your restorative dentistry, you don't really have a business doing those things, right? So I think, to me, those things make sense because they have a proven path of creating good clinical care within their business model.
Yeah, and you know, even within your when you sign on with Heartland, you know, they have a number of courses right out of the gate that I thought were helpful for me. Invisalign, endodontic course, oral surgery course, that you're learning, you know, some of this basic stuff. That was helpful for me. Mm-hmm. I got Invisalign certified.
Okay.
You know, I'm not doing a ton of Invisalign. But
if you wanted to, you could.
But yeah, I do, you know, simple, easy cases. I got a brother that's an orthodontist, so I ask him a lot of questions. I don't get too involved in it. But it's, you know, that those are things that when I talk to guys that I went to school with, you know, most of the guys I went to school with aren't doing Invisalign.
Right.
You know, 3 years out of school. And it's because... it feels like you can only do so much so fast.
Right.
And so in that way, Heartland's been great, right? Because I've been able to learn from a lot of guys within the company.
A lot of good people, by the way.
Yep.
And they have some wonderful clinicians in the organization.
So implants.
Bruce Baird, Marvin Berlin, Team Atlanta. And there's so many good people within the organization.
Sure.
Mark Kazarski, Ed Lowe, a lot of those come out and do the aesthetic training with them, where they were at one point. So a lot of good training there.
They have mentor docs, you know, and I've been able to go in their practices or look over their shoulder, or they come into my practice, help me with something. So, you know, there's a lot of good that can come from it. And I can understand why a lot of guys coming out of school are attracted to that.
Because, you know, talking to me or my friends, I'm like, why would anybody want to go do that, right? You know, because that's the perception.
Yeah.
Because my generation didn't have that as an option or a choice. Right. So we're like, why would you go do that, you know?
Well, I think, like you said, there's such a negative stigma that, you know, I can certainly see why people would ask that question.
And on top of that, you're in a place with Heartland, for example, that doesn't have an equity model.
Right, you know? Right. But, you know, when you got 1,000 offices, you're going to have 1,000 different experiences, right? Because, you know, my experience in the office I had in Illinois is totally different than the office I'm having now in Texas, or the experience I'm having in the office in Texas. And so it can vary so much that, you know, if you're just reading what somebody said online, you know, in some forum or whatever, it's like, well, okay, that may have been your experience, but my experience is totally different.
You got to go see for yourself, right?
Right.
That can be said for within my practice even, right? Because if you get me as a doctor or my associate as a doctor, you have two different experiences because we're two different personalities, right?
Yeah.
And just like people have personalities, practices also have personalities.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, interesting. What's your biggest challenge right now? What do you think is holding you back from more success?
Well, you know, I still feel like I'm kind of a baby. You know, I'm only almost 3 years out of school. So I'm very happy with my growth and progress, really. Okay. You know, for me, it's just step by step. You know, I've I have developed my skills in other areas of dentistry, and now I feel like implants is the next step for me. Okay. So I'm happy with where I'm at and where I'm going.
Do you ever see ownership in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought, ever since dental school, that I would eventually have ownership. Yeah.
What if you made the money you wanted to make without ownership?
That's the question that I've thought about a lot lately.
Because I argue that most dentists of my generation, I shouldn't say most, a good percentage of my generation dentists would be better off as associates in their own practice, letting a true professional run the business.
Yeah.
And I think they would make the same amount of money.
Yeah, so that's the question I think about all the time now, because I work for Heartland, no one has ownership in a practice. But what if I'm in an office and I'm producing and making the kind of income that I'd like to make, and I'm happy with the office, happy with the patients and the staff, you know, how much incentive is there for me to go out on my own? I think about that all the time. If you would have asked me when I was in school, I would have told you for sure I'm just going to own my own practice.
Right.
Maybe a couple. Now, you know,
what is this obsession with your generation wanting to own multiple practices?
I don't know. Everyone says that, huh?
I don't see the draw to that. Because most people aren't making more money doing that. There are a select few that are when they hit multiple practices. Yeah. But you stretch yourself thin, you bring on headaches, and the reward isn't significant, economically speaking.
I think that people are just naive. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk to so many people like in dental school, everyone's going to own 1,000 practices, right?
Sure, there's only one company that owns that many.
Right, everyone's going to, you know, be the king on top of the hill. And I just think that they don't realize how much work and effort that takes. And maybe that doesn't improve the quality of their life. You know, and maybe they don't realize that. But they think that because they know somebody who owns several practices and they just think that their life is the greatest thing ever. So I don't know. It seems a lot more popular today than it probably was 10 or 20 years ago.
I wonder why people aren't more open-minded to being in a DSO if they can do the dentistry they want, if they see a path of progress forward, if they have good service and support, and they can make the income that they want to make and consistently see income growth, what is the allure of owning?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
I don't know.
Okay.
Just maybe it's their own pride. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's this fallacy of being your own. Look, I'm saying these things because I have a personality of being my own boss.
Right.
Okay. But if your goal is to have an income and to do certain types of dentistry,
right,
you don't have to own your own practice to do that. And right, I can't get people to I can't seem to get more and more people to understand that fact.
Yeah, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people chase that so much. Because I agree with you. I think some, maybe it's not a good fit.
Right. That's amazing. Do you have any questions for me?
No, I wish I had more answers for you.
No, I just, it's been a very eye-opening conversation for me.
Good.
Because it's been more of a psychology lesson for me, you know. The part about you not being able to afford your plane ticket,
yeah,
that really said something to me. Uh-huh. About you a little bit, and more about my side of that, that sometimes we should ask, okay? And, you know, because that's what our competition is doing at the end of the day, right?
Well, I would say this. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that had that doctor offered to fly me out, put me in a hotel for a night or two, and maybe even giving me a small sign-on bonus, mm-hmm. I would have been there.
Define small sign-on bonus.
$10,000.
Okay.
You know, I would have been working with him for sure. I would say 99% sure I would be working with them and not Heartland right now. So.
Okay, Google. Turn off.
Okay, let me change camera.
Vanilla ice.
All right, you're going to restart.
So I don't know what that means to you, but, you know, maybe there was a missed opportunity.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. You know, I think for you, it worked out in the best.
It's been great.
You know, yeah. And you never know. But as I try to expand my practice, or as I try to coach other dentists to expand their practice by bringing in their first associate when they never had experience with this, at the end of the day, you have to understand your market.
Yeah.
Okay? And the market is where associates are going, and 60% of them are going to DSOs. 60% or more are going to DSOs. So you have to understand what's the allure of going there, and you have to position yourself as an alternative. And maybe you don't have to go to the level that they go, but you have to find a compelling story to make people want to do that. And I think a small investment in flying somebody to see you is reasonable. I don't personally necessarily, as a private practitioner, maybe agree with the sign-on part of it, but certainly, you know, I do agree with at least offering to bring, you know, to pay for an interview out, because most people out of dental school or just beginning their career, economics are certainly mm-hmm. a big burden there. So I understand that. You know, I experienced that in my own life.
Sure.
You know, when I first started as well. But there are benefits of owning a practice. I'm a firm believer in controlling your own destiny. Mm-hmm. But I believe as an employer and associate, where you're in a model where you're paid on what you do, and you're in a model where you have the opportunity to do a wide range of services, I think that can be an environment where it's as good as ownership without the hassles of ownership. And that's all a personality decision that each person has to make.
I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stresses that come with ownership.
Yeah.
And
some of us love that.
It's not for everyone though, right?
No, it's not.
So.
Craig, how does somebody get in touch with you?
How do they get in touch with me?
Yeah, what's your email address?
So my email is my last name, Lamborn.
Lamborne.
And then it's USC.
As in University of South Carolina. University of Southern California.
The true SC.
Okay.
Southern California.
At
gmail.com.
Gmail.com.
Yep.
Are you on Facebook and social medias as well?
I am on Facebook. I have a personal account on Facebook.
Craig Lamborn.
Yep, but you should be able to reach me at that email if you want to talk more. So, yeah.
I think a lot of people might reach out to you because a lot of people in that situation where they have this fear of what it would be like to go to a DSO.
Sure.
I think a lot of people have that fear of... Let me ask you this before I let you go.
Yeah.
Looking back, do you wish that you had told that doctor, not because your life would be different, but do you wish that you had just said to him, hey, I can't afford to come out. Could you help me with that part? Or was that truly pride that kept you from doing that?
I don't know. I guess I just kind of felt a little embarrassed to ask, you know?
What would you tell somebody else, knowing what you know today, if some dental student from graduating from 2018 right now came and said to you, that I have this opportunity, but I can't afford to fly there or drive there, whatever it may be, would you tell them to ask?
I guess, I mean, the worst that can happen is they could say no, right?
Right.
And if they're
really... Well, that tells you a lot.
If they're really interested in you, you know, and I think, you know, perhaps I should have been more upfront and just honest and said, hey, you know what? I would like to come out and meet you and see the practice and all that, but I can't afford that. I can't afford two nights in a hotel and a plane ticket or two. So is there any way you can help me out? And, you know, if they're not willing to help, then maybe that's not a fit for you.
Right.
You know, maybe they're not that interested in you.
I agree with you on that part. I agree that, you know, it says a lot. I'm not saying they should be willing to pay for it. I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
But I'm saying the burden, the onus is on you to be upfront with somebody.
Yeah.
And it gives you a measure of that practice if they're willing to invest.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if they really like you, like if I talked to you off the street at a meeting one day and you said, hey, can you pay me to come out? I don't have any time. I haven't had a real decent conversation with you. So my answer may be no. But if I've talked to you and I'm truly interested in bringing you in,
sure.
I mean, I should be willing to invest a little bit to bring you in. And if somebody isn't willing to make that investment or meet you halfway on that investment, then that might tell you something about what they're willing to invest in you down the road.
Sure.
And mentoring and time and CE and all of these different things. So I would encourage anybody in that position to at least ask. And I think meeting halfway is a very reasonable option for the private practice dentist. Because for the private practice dentist, people like myself, you know, the solo
yeah.
owner, that's very different than what we're used to. Very different. But in the DSO world, that's the norm.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small price for them to pay to really impress somebody and bring somebody in.
Yeah. And if you're, like I said, if you're serious about that candidate, if you've had a phone conversation, a phone interview, let's mm-hmm. say, and they've passed round one, I would think that as an owner, why not?
But
why not spend $1,000?
That's nothing in the scheme of things.
Right. Just have someone come out, check out the practice, get to know them, see if they're a good fit for your office.
Yeah.
To me,
or even at least say, hey, Craig, you know what? I'll be happy to pay for you. If we go another step, then I'll fly you and your wife back.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily know if I want to fly you and your wife and your
sure.
kids the first time.
Sure.
Right? But I certainly can see maybe meeting just for you.
For sure.
Okay. Wow.
Absolutely. I think that probably both parties in my situation, we could
you think there are a lot of people in that situation? A lot of other young dentists in that situation?
I think so. I mean,
I think it's lost on me. I mean, not me, but my generation even, that we don't understand. Because I make fun of it. I'm guilty of making fun of the debt and all of that. But at the end of the day, it's real. Okay.
School is so expensive this, you know, for students these days that I got to believe that there are a large percentage of guys coming out of school, guys and gals who are coming out of school who just don't have any money.
Any disposable money.
Right. And so it's not everyone's situation, but I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't have the income to go and fly around the country and check out multiple jobs.
And it's not like you're out drinking and partying and wasting money on those things, you know?
No.
Because that's what I am guilty of making that assumption.
Yeah.
That, oh, Craig doesn't have money because he's out eating fancy dinners and drinking, you know, Russian mules or whatever they are, Moscow mules,
yeah.
and living the high life in Vegas. And here he is, won't be able to do this. But it's not the situation.
Well, I mean, for example, student loans, they only fund for the student. They don't take into consideration that you might have a wife and kids.
Right.
So we had four on the way living off of one individual student loan. My wife wasn't working. So, you know, for someone like that, there's no money to be wasted, right?
Right.
So, you know, it was fine. You know, I'm not complaining.
No, I know you're not. And I don't want you to think, I don't want listeners to think that. It's just been very eye-opening for me.
Yeah. But I'm sure there's others like me. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know.
But I always assume most people are wasting money.
Yeah.
And I know that culturally for you, that's not the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
You know, my biggest advice to you would be, is every year learn a new service.
I think that's good counsel.
You know, And some years, as you, what I did my early years was, well, I'm 19 years in now. It's hard for me to imagine that. Is I learned a lot of new, I learned new services, a new service every year. And then once I reached the point where I had 8 or 10 things in my bag of tricks,
yeah.
I went back and learned advanced levels of some of those services.
Kind of relearned some of those.
Relearned, but even took it up a notch, right? Like, let's see, implants. There's single tooth implants. Sure. There's immediate implants. There's full arch implants. Right. Removable full arch. There's fixed full arch. I mean, implant dentistry is a 5-10 year journey just in learning everything that goes with it.
Sure.
And then say, like, restorative dentistry. You know, maybe you learn quadrant dentistry and what it goes there, and then you come back and learn cosmetics, and then you come back and learn functional cosmetics, and then you come back and learn upper and lower jaw together. I mean, there's so many things that you can go back and learn that you really never master a complete breadth of things. But I would counsel people not to get stuck in this implant journey where that's all you do, unless you're in a practice where that's all you do. But to continue to learn the other components of general dentistry along with it. And then when you get a good wide range of services and you have a good idea of where you want to start narrowing your focus,
yeah.
then really dive deep on those things, you know? And that would be my advice to any young person learning or even older person, seasoned person learning along the way is keep learning good general dentistry skills mm-hmm. and then dive in deeper along the way.
No, I think that's why I agree. And for a lot of it, for me, is you know you kind of master what you're comfortable with.
Right.
And then you have to get uncomfortable.
You do have to get uncomfortable. You it's know, called disruption.
Right. And so that's the thing is I think it's easy for everyone to get comfortable. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Good luck to you. You're going to do great.
Thank you.
Keep on keeping on, you know. Always learn.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.